You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
So, what are you guys going to do? You going to continue to be a bunch of soft, underperforming, tattooed millionaires?
They said all along, we're not, the perfection is not possible. We just want to get the big decisions right.
What are we doing? What are we doing?
Green room getting hot.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
The right answer was a goal in Times Square so we could do butts up, but that was an easy one.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental on MLSsoccer.com. I am Andrew Wiebe. I am off a red-eye flight. I took a nap. I feel drugged. I'm told there might be dead animals in my walls.
Uh-huh.
It's a day.
Wait a minute. That last part.
Correct. That is Matt Doyle. You know his dulcet tones. Bobby Warshaw is amused.
What kind of tones
but
do
quiet.
I have?
Isn't that dulcet?
Innocent.
No, yeah. I think so.
You know, straight out of Mechanicsburg. Uh-huh. Yeah, so hey, look, it's a big show.
Wait, no. Dead animals in your walls.
I'll get you there.
All
transfer
right.
Deadline day. Gam Tam and Sam coming up. LAFC's first ever home game ends in dramatic fashion. I was there. It was goosebump inducing for 90 minutes. It was not goosebump
inducing.
Were
you screaming? Because your voice, man.
I was doing a lot of things. I'll tell you all about those things as well. Ben Bear is going to come here and I don't know, maybe get made fun of by listeners in the mailbag. We have an amazing email about free space. That's the only tease I will give you. It's apparently there might be dead animals in my walls. It started smelling a little funny in the basement, and it's very clean, very new, but it's perhaps a problem, I'm told, and they're looking into it. They're not sure.
So this is a landlord issue.
Correct.
Okay. So when your house starts smelling, which is apparently what happened.
Correct.
I'm not going to pass judgment
on
that.
No, well, look, it's very clean, which is what was mysterious to me, and my nose isn't good as my girlfriend's. So she's been saying this for a week and a half, and I've been saying, I don't smell anything. There's no problems here. You're imagining this.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out today when I got home, I don't know if it was the West Coast fresh air that I got, but now I can smell it. And it
right.
smells.
So you contact the landlord and now it's the money pit.
Yeah. So on the way home, I'm going to pick up the sledgehammer
mm-hmm.
and just start destroying walls just to see what's behind them. Because now I live in a perpetual state of terror that there are rotting carcasses in my direct vicinity as I sleep, as I care for my child.
You're actually picking up a sledgehammer?
Me?
Yeah. Is that something that
no,
you're going to do yourself?
No, I'm definitely not going to do that. The experts are going to come in.
I thought that actually sounds kind
of
cool.
Yeah, it's a little bit of
but
HGTV.
But with Andrew's back, there's no way.
Yeah.
Correct.
He would be down
after,
for the rest of 2018.
After two cross-country flights in a matter of 5 days, lay me to rest. 6 feet deep, I'd be done. It'd be over for me. So if you have experience with this particular brand of apartment terrorism, let me know, because it's weighing on me right now. I watched not as much MLS as you guys watched, so I'm going to lean on you as we talk about the weekend here. There were a lot of storylines. There were some issues with VAR, with the referees, but first there was a first. First ever game at Bank of California Stadium. LAFC opened this thing up, and I'll tell you, the day itself was one of the best soccer parties in the U.S. I've ever been a part of.
Mm-hmm.
To spend that 5 or 6 hours we did prior to the game on Extra Time Live and just generally hanging out with the 3252 was one of the most welcoming soccer experiences I've ever had. It just felt like everywhere you went, somebody was trying to offer you something. Like, I don't know how many beers I had to turn down that just it crushed me internally. Yeah, you're going to throw the quote marks up there on me right now?
Turned down.
Yeah. No, I did.
You have to hydrate, Andrew. Come on.
I mean, I wanted to, no doubt about it. The nice thing about the 3252 is they've been given this like big lot right next to the stadium where they're just tailgating.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like a college tailgate because there are all these different groups within their umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
You see the 3252, and that's what it's kind of called in a mainstream sense, but you have the Cuervos and the Black Army and tens of other groups that I've now somehow forgotten in this very moment.
Because you were hydrating.
Yeah, the hydration was key.
I feel like I can always judge the fun level based on the amount of sweat on David Goss's back.
Yes.
And based on that, it looked like an amazing, amazing day.
So half of that was sweat, no doubt. No doubt, because it's Dave. The other half was beer that we were just soaked in as we, stuck ourselves in the middle of, I don't even know, like soccer mosh pits. Is that what you would call those? You know, where people just are spontaneously so joyful and happy that they gather into a kind of a horde and just jump up and down and throw beer in the air.
I would say that with soccer, you can't call it a mosh pit.
Yeah.
What do you call it then?
I don't know, man. People just being drunk and happy.
Drunk and happy.
I don't know if there's a word for it. The Germans probably
have a word
soccer,
for it. That's our soccer, bro.
Yes.
It was a lot of fun. So props to them. Props to everybody who gave us some carne asada. Props to everybody who jumped on camera with us and had a good time.
I imagine the Mexican food at the tailgates was just off.
Yeah,
just
it was decent. Yeah, and yeah. I really felt the whole time was just this undercurrent of joy.
Yeah.
Of our day has finally come. We've waited for 4 years. We've watched this stadium go up. We've had 6 away games, and a lot of the folks out there were like, "I've been to Seattle. I went to ours. We went to all these places, and now we get our day." And they got it. And the first 90 minutes was
Chivas-y.
Was regrettable from a soccer sense. Was not entertaining. I was a little bit apprehensive for them as an organization, because you want that jump off point to be something that is memorable and your fans look back and say, "I was there." And it's hard to look back and say, "I was there," other than the obvious stadium stuff, when it's kind of nil-nil and there's not a lot of reasons to get excited. And then Laurent Simon steps up, and then Stefan Frey flub-a-dub-dubs.
Yeah. Almost a year to the day after he did the same thing last year against, was it Kobayashi for the Revs?
Can you explain the division of fans within the Los Angeles area?
What do you mean?
How does one decide whether they're a Galaxy or an LAFC? Are the LAFC fans departed Galaxy fans? Were they not MLS fans before?
I think there's a mixture of everything. They're obviously Black Army, and they don't like to talk about this, so this will probably be the last time I say anything about it.
The one rule about Black Army,
they don't,
you know it.
Yeah, they don't like to be associated back with Chivas USA. They've made a decision. Their decision is that they are supporting LAFC, and they are now LAFC supporters. And that is their team. I think there's a mixture of things. I think there's some folks that said, you know what, I live north of downtown and Carson was too far for me.
Yeah.
Or I'm a recent person to come here, or I just never felt affinity for the Galaxy, or I wasn't an MLS fan. I liked, you know, whatever it is, Tottenham, Watford. Bobby, avert your eyes. Engage with us. This game matters not at all. And I think there was a cool factor that they latched onto.
Yeah.
And they said, "Well, oh, that crest is awesome. Those hats are awesome. I see them everywhere. This culture looks like something I want to be a part of. Let's give it a try."
Yeah, my wife enjoyed the crest and the uniform. She thought it was sharp. And shout out to Jordan Harvey for understanding that the correct move was to wear the all-black shoes.
Well, the correct move is always to wear the all-black shoes.
I agree.
The all-black cleats,
I agree.
That is the standard bear. Bobby, what did you wear?
This is a good benchmark of your age.
Really?
Because there's a strict line on this. I'm still above the line where I prefer it all-black, but I think I'm right at it. I think people just below my age never saw an era of black boots.
Got you. They want the Vapors or the, you know, whatever, the Adi Zeros with the color.
Really? Yeah, really. Came into its own in the early mid 90s, which
I would say later than that.
I had like a pink pair that I just like got handed down from my brother, who would be in that line where he says, "I'm not a black on black guy," and I wore them to like men's league for a while in the city, and being the lack of technical ability sort of central defender that I am, I eventually realized that I had
you
to find black on black
you
boots.
You can't be the guy
because,
in the pink boots.
It just wasn't working for me from an aesthetic sense. Let's go back to the game. It wasn't working for a lot of people from an aesthetic sense. And that's okay. That happens. Things happen. You know, this team has been on the road for a long time. There was a lot of pressure. Seattle Sounders have been decimated. Didn't have their center backs. Don't really have a cohesive form of attack. But it didn't matter because it got set off at the end by Laurent Simon in the end.
Yeah, and it was the ending that I think the game needed from just an LAFC narrative standpoint. But for me, the narrative was – boy, Ozzie Alonso looks good again for 80 minutes. And granted, he maybe should have been sent off in the first half because he had 3 yellow card-worthy fouls and only got one of them. But for 80 minutes, he was pretty clearly the best player on the field. And it didn't matter that there was no Chad Marshall or Roman Torres. The other issues that the Sounders have had in defense didn't matter because Ozzie was there just eating everything up in central midfield. And L.A. couldn't get anything going as long as he was in there. And, of course, once they took him off, it was a different story.
You talk about this game. This is the way most Seattle Sounders games feel, though, doesn't it? Over the past 2 years throughout Schmetzer's reign, most games are kind of ugly and not that fun to watch. Is that a fair statement?
That's fair. They've had runs. Like last summer, they had a run starting, you know, with that DC game where they came back from three goals down, where they were playing some good attacking, sort of free flowing football. And I think they can actually get there again. I think we saw some of that. But in general, yeah, it's a little lethargic. They're still really slow and building from back to front. The question is, can that change if Hazy's the guy in the middle? And I think the question coming out of this for LAFC is, who's there, Hazy? Because Mark Anthony Kay, it looks like a useful player, but he's not that. And Atuesta hasn't been impressive at all so far in his very brief run. Granted, they're 5-0-2, so they don't have like big worries right now. But I still look at this team, and they're not able to get the type of purchase that I want to see from them in central midfield.
What happens when Andre Horta comes in? Where does Andre Horta fit into this team right now?
I don't know, man. Like unless you know, Bob Bradley has the idea that he could turn him into Pirlo, I don't know, because I don't see the attack as being the issue with this team. The issue with this group is that they lack that thing in deep central midfield. You know, and Benny Failhaber has done a really nice job of sort of playing that role, but I don't, you know, that's not who Benny is, and I don't know where the answer comes
Benny
from.
Benny at his best in Kansas City always operated with a very, very good structure around him.
Yeah.
From a defensive standpoint, from a ground coverage standpoint, he always had running mates that could do some of that dirty work. And there were years where we said, wow, Benny has really transitioned. That MVP caliber year.
He 2015, he
went
was remarkable.
Both sides of the ball. But he still had that structure behind him, and he was allowed to be that player because of the players around him. Now, he's still, I think, maybe not as brilliant as he was, but he still has a lot of those same ideas and is still a lot of that same class. And you see it on the training field. Well, I'll tell you, when I watch training for this team, is Bob Bradley is very hands-on, and we knew that, but he was very hands-on with Mark Anthony Kay. Mm-hmm. And he was bringing him aside and showing him little things, even just in terms of body positioning, receiving the ball, turning, where he wanted him to be kind of two steps ahead. Like, when you get it here, you're going to want to be positioned this way because I want you to move the ball in this direction. And so I think what something Davis said over and over, and he talked about it a lot with me this weekend, is that he thinks Bob is slowly adding pieces to this team. Let's be good at two or three things.
Yeah.
They'll figure us out. And as they figure us out, we'll keep adding more things throughout this season as it goes on. But that personnel issue will continue to be an issue, I think, for them as you try to become a different team in that sense.
Yeah. I mean, that was a really good take from Goss, apparently. I'm a little disappointed by that, but I guess I have to give him credit.
He's not here.
Yeah. Where is he?
He's still in L.A. He did not go on the red eye.
You left him in Manhattan
Correct.
Beach.
I'm on the Brian Dunseth school of thought now, which is, you know, first flight out, and I don't know how Dunny does it.
Yeah.
He's a freaking monster, man. I don't know how he does it because I'm a shell of a human being right now.
Well, he's also on team no back fat. He's on both teams.
I had McDonald's for lunch, so I'm team back fat right now. No doubt about that one. One other thing I'll say about the stadium, and I wonder how you guys felt about it at home. It is gorgeous in every way. Like touring that thing, you're just kind of amazed that there's a facility like this for soccer in the U.S. and that private folks put $350 million into something like this. And I had the opportunity to talk to Mia Hamm, which was just kind of like I was gobsmacked to even be close to her. I walked past Magic Johnson in the elevator lobby, and I wondered to myself, how does anyone play basketball against someone of that size who could move like that, pass like that, and defend like that? And then just Will Ferrell is a force of nature. And you kind of like he's a magnet. Like, yeah. Even like, you just kind of are drawn to him at all times. And when he was on the FS1 set, it became a madhouse all around that. And the whole thing was a madhouse. Like, the logistics of the stadium have not been figured out.
Yeah.
They're still like going through their testing process there, because everybody wanted gear, everybody wanted food, everybody wanted everything at a time. And, you know, this was night one of many nights to come, and they'll figure that out. But it was still an incredible soccer experience that I'll cherish forever. And the best part was, after the game, being on the field, the players are celebrating, doing their little chant in front of the 3252, and we were literally right there. And just seeing all those faces was, I mean, all my arms were just covered in goosebumps.
All of them.
All five of them.
Okay.
Both of them. Help me out here, guys. Help me out. I got animals in my walls, and I'm like on 3 hours of sleep
first
on
of all,
an airplane.
You should note to Extra Time Radio listeners that you did the Extra Time Live.
Correct.
And you did a tour of all this, and it was fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
So we got a chance watching from the studio to watch you give that tour, and it was really cool.
Yeah, go check that out. LAFC, if you have a chance to go to a game there, do it. 5 wins in 7. What an incredible start for this team. Helps they're in the West. I feel like this is a playoff team just because of the –
I already made my guarantee. You know where I stand.
East, here are the stats you gave me here, Doyle, as I asked you to help me out and understand what happened this weekend. East dominated 5-0 this weekend, 5 wins, no losses. 21-16-3 all year. 2 of the losses were to TFC's B team. You have teams like NYCFC, they got a 3-1 win against the only other unbeaten, which was FC Dallas. David Villa, 400 and 401. The dude does nothing but score goals. Atlanta, it's a interconference matchup against Montreal. Montreal bunker, like I probably haven't seen any team bunker. Got the opportunity to watch this game, and I was thinking, how's it going to work? Safiri Tider.
I disagree.
Gets a goal,
I don't think they bunkered that much.
Okay, explain
that. Thanks
for
the call.
I was watching the box score, the chalkboard as I watched this game, just updating it for like defensive actions. And it was like
sure
Remy
seemed like a bunker.
It looked like Remy Gard was trying to like paint his own 18 in defensive actions.
They started the game with their defensive block in the middle of their own half. They didn't start at the top of their 18. It got moved to the top of their 18, but not by their own choice. And that didn't happen until the second half. Credit Atlanta for mounting the pressure and pushing Montreal farther and farther back. But Montreal started their defensive block 20 yards ahead of their own 18. And that, to me, distinguishes it from a bunker, which really would say we're going to sit at the top of the 18.
So it's an expansive bunker. It's a nice bunker. It's a bunker with amenities, perhaps, you might say.
I would just call it good, proper defending.
Okay.
This, to me, if you want
to – Final 20 minutes, what would you call that?
Yeah, that's bunkering.
Okay.
That's a little – that's sitting deeper, and that's really hanging on
no,
for survival.
No, the final 20 minutes, they came out of the bunker because they started losing.
Yeah.
From 70 –
Then they got run.
Yeah.
Kevin Kratz or Sebastian Giovinco, who do you take? Free kick, your life's on the line.
That's a great question.
Giovinco. I mean, respect to Kratz because he's like,
he's 3 of 4 all-time in Major League Soccer.
He's pretty good.
3 of 4.
Yeah.
He hit 2 in this in one game.
I'm still going Giovinco, but man. Those were two scorching free kicks.
I'm tempted to go Kratz.
Miguel Almiron is the best player in Major League Soccer right now. Period.
Period? Do you agree, Bobby?
I don't disagree. We could pick somebody new every week, though.
No, I'm going to pick Miguel Almiron every week.
I don't have enough. It doesn't feel right just when I hear it come into my ears,
okay.
But I don't have anything off the top of my head to disagree.
I'll tell you what. He sure helped my fantasy team, too.
It's true. How many points?
30, because I captained him.
That was a good move by you. Yeah. I'm looking at Toronto FC, which is one of the other – when we talk about the elite in the East, Toronto FC are always going to come up.
Mm-hmm.
And they drew this game against the Chicago Fire, and there was a lot of controversy here, which I'm sure, Bobby, that you covered on Instant Replay today. Alan Gordon gets the winner, as Alan Gordon does. This is just what – of his – let's see. I think of his 56 MLS goals.
16.
Nine have come 90th minute or later.
Yeah, I was going to say 16, 80th minute or later.
Yeah, that's like 20%.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
I just want to give my shout
crazy.
That every team should have an Alan Gordon on their team.
Absolutely.
And it's insane.
That many Alan Gordons don't exist.
But
there's one Alan Gordon. Don't you bring up Pillow Feet.
I will absolutely not bring up Pillow Feet in this scenario. But what is Alan Gordon good at? He can jump high. He's super free. If there's any type
much,
of...
He has much better vision than you're giving him credit
that's
for.
That's fair. Okay, so maybe you can't get Alan
he's
Gordon.
He's a good, smart soccer player.
This is fair. Maybe you can't get Alan Gordon. But of every kind of soccer player, the type like Alan Gordon is out there in America to get. Good in the air, competitive, hates to lose, fights for everything.
I think what makes him special are all those things, but the bigger point is there's a little bit of Wando in him. A little bit of like understanding that with those skills he's going to get opportunities in these spots and understanding what those final minutes in that helter skelter is going to be like and what sort of service his teammates are going to put in. And then he just fights you in tooth and claws, and he's bigger and he'll find the position and he'll put the ball in the back of the net. Toronto FC, I'm looking at their injury report right now. Nick Haglund, Drew Moore, Chris Mavinga, Eric Zavaleta, those are only their 4 center backs.
Right.
Josie Altidore, he's only arguably the best 9 in Major League Soccer.
Right.
Like pure center forward. I mean, look, David Villa likes to veer off. I mean, I said arguably. Give me a break here. And Justin Morrow, a best 11 left back. And not on this list right now is Victor Vasquez, who's clearly not 100%. Mm-hmm. Also a best 11, number 10 in this league. Toronto FC are at the bottom of the Eastern Conference. Toronto FC have been gut punched by the CCL. They have 4 points in 6 games, which is good because 6 games is the fewest played in the league right now. Mm-hmm. Are Toronto FC in any trouble whatsoever? Is there a scenario in which we should be concerned? Because Drew Moore is out for a long time, months, not weeks, with this quad tear. Could there be a
Doyle's
going to
say
issue?
No first, and then I'm going to follow up with the yes.
No, they're fine. They're not great. I think I'd feel a lot happier if they had picked up, you know, 2 more points this weekend. But last year through 6 games, they had 7 points. This year they have 4 points. It's not great, but they've been in a, you know, early season hole before. Morrow's almost back. Mavinga's almost back. Haglund's almost back. Vasquez was back, did score this weekend. Josie's 2 weeks away. They're fine.
They're not fine one.
They might be fine, but let me give you this scenario. You just play in a Champions League final, and all of a sudden you've got to play the Chicago Fire in Week 9. You have to play the Philadelphia Union in Week 10. How on earth does a human care about playing the Chicago Fire when you were just in a Champions League final penalty kicks? The Toronto FC have been as good as they are because they've been consistent, because they've shown up ready to play every single day. And I don't blame them for emotionally. We already saw it. They were physically tired at the end of that Fire game, but it also just didn't seem like they were competing as hard as Chicago. Because it gets to that 85th minute, and you say, what is really my purpose in life to do this doggy? And once you've been in that Champions League final, maybe you struggle to find that purpose in a Week 10 game.
So Toronto FC are at the bottom of the East. Mm-hmm. The East is shaken out here. NYCFC at the top. Atlanta United behind them by a point. Orlando City FC have won 5 straight games. They're there. New England Revolution get a win somewhat controversially against Sporting Kansas City this weekend, 1-0. That Teal Bunbury goal, we could go on and on about that, what you think. Columbus Crew SC got a win against San Jose. They're there. New York Red Bulls. Below them are the Fire, the Union, the Impact, DC United, and Toronto. I think right now, outside of Toronto, the hierarchy is kind of matches up from a talent perspective in a lot of ways for me. You know, they might have some shuffling there. The Red Bulls could climb. Revs might be overperforming a little bit. Mm-hmm. Maybe the Union or the Fire could make a run. Toronto FC would push who out of that playoff field at the end of the year?
I think the likeliest ones would be Orlando City, the Revs, or Columbus.
You just said half the names.
Yeah.
There's six teams, and you name three.
Do we not believe in Orlando City despite 5 straight wins?
Their defense is still.
Does Lamine Sané like exist in a perpetual state of one arm in the air,
we
looking
were,
to the assistant
Bobby
referee?
And I, Bobby
like,
and
defend, bro.
Bobby
defend.
And I were wondering yesterday if this is actually the Lamine Sané who played in the Bundesliga, or if they signed the wrong guy, because he has not looked the part, and like the way they were beaten over the top by a very simple ball. By Colorado, I'm happy for them that they've won 5 straight. I'm all in on their ability to possess the ball and their ability to score goals. I think that defense is a tire fire, and I think it's going
to
haunt them.
You're into their ability to possess the ball?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I haven't seen any ability to have any worthwhile possession that moves the other team or builds any type of attack.
Yeah, well. We're gonna
agree. You guys
to
have
disagree.
Disagreed on a lot. Yeah. We've got to let Doyle go here. We'll finish up this segment with Bobby Warshaw. People have things to do, and that's just the way it goes. Bobby, I do have a question for you when it comes to the Western Conference. Who's good? Who is any good? Like, up and down, the Dynamo go to Minnesota and lose. That's fine. It's a
never,
home game.
Never thought
not
they
bad.
Were good or would be good.
Okay, there you go. That's your answer on that one. San Jose?
Yeah, they have not been good. Yeah, they don't appear to be. I was going to say that I thought they looked good at times, be positive, but nah.
Yeah, 2-1 losers to Crew SC, the return of Grelladino. That's always an entertaining factor for me. Yeah, Colorado lose at home to Orlando. Probably don't seem to.
I strangely like watching Colorado play right now, though.
You have a lot of strange things that you like.
I do.
You were ride or die in the Union for a long time. And
I'm still there. You guys, I'm back. Like, I kind of put 1 foot off the train last week, but I'm back with both.
You were dragging. You were getting ready to
Yeah,
jump.
El Cino back into the starting lineup.
Maybe
let's go.
Tuck and roll. Bork Dochal with the Landon Donovan-esque screamer.
That's exactly
corner.
Right. That's exactly
3-2
right.
3-2 against DC United at home. That convinces you?
I do. I just want to say Colorado real quick. I kind of like their predictability that every time they get the ball, you know what exactly every single player is looking to do. And I really like watching Enzo Martinez play.
A lot of people have liked Enzo. I still love Don Baggi. Look, it was a bad defensive play by Orlando, but add a baby for sticking it inside the back post.
Yeah.
Doubt this man, doubt this man, doubt this man. He will continue to put the ball in the back of the net. Sounders at the bottom. They lose again.
Do you like the Sounders?
In what sense? For the playoffs? I like them better than the at least four of the five teams in front of them. Portland Timbers could be a toss-up for me. But I do think the Sounders will be fine. I think they'll get healthy once they get their back line right, once they get a little bit of help in the summer, once they start rolling again. Maybe Victor Vasquez gets rolling and Wolf Eigner is okay.
Ikram.
I was Wolf Erickson. All these guys it's just flowing together for me today.
It does feel like the Seattle Sounders have two or three guys that if you were to put on any team in Major League Soccer would make them instantaneously a playoff contender. Chad Marshall, Ozzie Alonso, Christian Roldan are just these guys that can will a team from the way that they play, from the influence they have on a game. So even though I don't love the way they play as a team, I don't find them predictable, I don't find them fun to watch, they just have these guys that can really dominate a game on any given day.
I went to, while I was in LA, I also went to the Galaxy match, and right now they're a team where you say if you took three or four guys here, they would go on to any team. They're certainly talent-wise, that team. Results-wise, it's continued to be a struggle. 3-2 loss to the Red Bulls. We go back to referees and VAR. I don't think that third goal the Red Bulls get via that Kaku PK, I don't think that's a PK. It looked to me like it hit Dave Romney directly in his back.
I talked to my sources today, and they were pretty confident that it hit Romney's arm.
What are they pointing to?
They didn't point to anything. They were just like, that hit his arm.
Really?
And I said, okay.
Do you agree?
I don't see it. When I watch that video, and I watch that video many, many times, get ready for instant replay, I never saw it hit the arm.
It looked to me like it's dead in his back. LA Galaxy, from top to bottom, believe that Zlatan was onside, and that goal that he's put in should have counted.
We didn't have this conversation about offside because Zlatan was off. If you put the motion in still, it might just be his ear or his pinky toe, but he is offside. And as a culture, we have to acknowledge whether we legitimately want that to be called offside. Letter of the law, he's off, flag should go up, but we can also make a decision as a soccer culture in this country whether that type of call, the benefit should go to the attacker.
I'm of the opinion that a pinky toe or ear is, I wouldn't call that offside.
And that's fine, but we should acknowledge that. Because you look at that picture and you say, all right, I get it. There's a part of his body that is beyond the line. He is off, he's stinking offside, but we can also acknowledge that it shouldn't be called. And that is the conversation.
Right. What would you call?
I'd give the benefit to the attacker.
That's what I would do as well. It just, to me, that's for the betterment of the game. From an entertainment standpoint, from a, hey, go take chances standpoint as an attacking team, go try to get in behind. Like, don't worry that just because you didn't time that run to the tee and every little piece of your body is in an onside position that will be called back. Now, the absolute majority needs to be onside. But to me, that pinky toe, that finger, that ear, you timed it. You got that one right. You had the dexterity as a team to be able to hit a pass at the right moment that the run was made, and the defensive team wasn't prepared. They didn't get their trap right. To me, but look, I don't make the laws of the game. I'm not in the VAR booth. I'm not a center referee, although they're trying to get us. I'm worried.
You'd be a great referee.
I'm worried because I just hit the McDonald's for lunch, so I'm like, ooh, the fitness aspect is going to be troublesome for me.
But there were multiple calls this week that had the same thing. There were two in Toronto. Did you get to the Toronto highlights?
Yep.
Jovinko and Hassler. One was allowed, the other wasn't, and the difference between the two is I just don't understand. There's this Zlatan one.
What do you think of the Schweinsteiger goal?
Clearly offside. Nikolic was off.
Nikolic,
he influenced the play.
For sure.
How they miss that, I don't know.
I'm not sure either. He clearly goes for the ball. But you right in front of the goalkeeper.
You said at the top that it was a questionable weekend for video review. I actually took the opposite approach and said this was the best weekend for video review because they might have allowed calls to be wrong, but only because they weren't clear and obvious. And this was the first weekend when it felt like there was a clear benchmark for what video was trying to do with clear and obvious.
I'll have to go back and watch it as a replay. It kills me I wasn't on it this week. Go do that yourself.
We missed you, dude. I'm nervous to see how it turned out.
Oh, boy. Teixeira got a red card. Didn't you know it's a replay on that one? The Vancouver Whitecaps 2-0 winners against RSL. Bonehead disciplinary issues are starting to become a hallmark of this Whitecaps team. Am I often saying that?
I would say that Bonehead
his shirt off after scoring a PK on a yellow.
I would put this outside the other red cards, because the other red cards were a mark of being a combative, angry team, which is what the Vancouver Whitecaps are and need to be to contend in Major League Soccer. And if you go over the line sometimes, you live with it if it's part of your identity. This is a different kind of Bonehead. There's no explanation for what this was.
This was Eric Hasley-esque.
But at least Hasley had the gimmick and the jersey under. That was awesome.
Props to Hasley, actually. Like, I don't think we ever truly appreciated.
Yeah, it doesn't do Hasley justice to put this in that category.
He thought he was going to get away with putting on a jersey underneath his jersey.
Can I blow your mind for a second, though?
Yeah, go ahead.
Let me blow your mind. Why didn't he get away with it? Why is what he did wrong?
There is a delay of game factor, because you got to do something with that jersey. And because it's just like, I don't know, you're opening up a can of worms there. The precedent that you're setting, if you're saying this guy doesn't get a yellow card, means that like 90% of the goal scorers in any league are going to throw on two jerseys just to roll with the gimmick.
And if a fan gets a jersey, listen.
I mean, you know what? You might have convinced me. The fan, you better get that to a kid, though. That jersey better get to a kid. If you get it to a kid, I don't have a problem with it.
There you go. Maybe you get a yellow card taken away if you do that.
I don't think that's the way.
That's
it would.
Not a
no,
good
no,
one.
That wouldn't work that way.
I just felt like we were on something.
Yeah. Houston Dynamo, I kind of mentioned them in Minnesota. And Minnesota fans, of course, are looking for respect, so they're going to get mad at me if we don't continue on this. First, Ibsen with just the stupidest backheel goal. That was filthy.
Good. Ibsen's good, man.
He is. He
might be the wrong player for what that team needs.
Sometimes he's good. Sometimes he's not as good. That's like a pretty kind way of. The effectiveness, like bell curve on Ibsen, is very belly.
It's almost like he's too good for the situation they're in. They almost need a hard man in defensive midfield, a little bit like Sam Cronin does the job, sprays balls, and here Ibsen is doing flicks and passes and wandering, and it's just the wrong point on the spectrum that Minnesota needs.
Are the Dynamo in for a regression from last year?
So listen, I like watching Albert Elise as much as the next person and Kyoto.
Got a goal this weekend.
And Monotas. But how many times can we say that they struggle to score and say that they're struggling to score opposed to they're just not that good at scoring?
I think it's pretty clear that the finishing, they're not that good at finishers.
Right.
I mean, at some point you have to say, like, you know, when you're in this many good positions, then you don't score, you're not a good finisher.
Right. So we continue to think that the past is not predictive of the future because the future is going to be better. But what if the past is perfectly predictive because that's just who they are as players?
Anything you took away from this weekend that we haven't touched here? I mean, I'm going to throw out Mike Grella and a huge congrats to him because it's taken some time for him to get back to the Grelladinho that was at the Red Bulls between injuries and just kind of like a professional shift for him. He was so good in their system. I want to throw out congratulations to that guy because he deserves that goal, and the Croatia needed that win. Anything that you took away?
There's a big conversation to be had about how you touched on the Galaxy, but how they're going to play with Zlatan and the team. This week they went to a 4-3-3, 4-2-3-1 with Ola Kamara on the left. Zlatan is the center striker, but also at times would come get the ball off the center backs and be next to Perry Kitchen. It was interesting how the Galaxy tried to solve that problem. At times it worked, at times it didn't. Ultimately, they got Red Bulled, man. They got run over by the chaos of a Red Bulls game.
3-2 Red Bulls. Any thoughts on this weekend? Let us know. 401-206-0MLS. Extra time at MLSsoccer.com is the email. You can also get us via the MLSsoccer.com mailbag. That's MLSsoccer.com/mailbag. I just want to quickly, before we go to break here, on the other side, Gamtam and Sam, shout out to anybody who said what's up in LA this weekend. We had so many people come up to us and say, hey, listen to the show. Love hearing you guys talk soccer. You know, just enjoy it every week. And we're so happy to be a part of your week and a part of your soccer experience. We're going to go to break. On the other side, MLS deadline day. Hint, it's been quiet.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Game time!
Talk Now at Extra Time, a radio driven by Continental. Gam Tam and Sam, you know that music. He's on the line now from the Windy City. Sam, how does it feel to have one jingle while Paul Tenorio gets two?
It feels good. You know, it's like we always talk about with MLS, right? It's important to have a clear identity, clear system, know your role, know your belief. Sometimes too many options is not a good thing. So I'm good with one jingle. Stick to it. Be really good at it.
Gotcha.
And, you know, just power through. I feel like that's the best way forward.
You had the first jingle as well.
Yeah, I did.
You kind of started the jingle.
I don't want to take credit for it because you know, I didn't make the jingle. And the person that made the jingle deserves all the credit. So credit to them.
That's David Dimmitt, by the way, who is
a legend
in ETR circles. Yeah. So this is kind of like the Beckham rule. Beckham didn't sign Beckham, but he was still Beckham. Are you saying you're Beckham?
Well, yeah, I guess.
Okay.
I mean, one time I looked into David Beckham's eyes. He opened a door, and it almost hit me right in the face. And then he looked into my eyes and said, sorry. And I kind of got lost there for him.
Okay.
Powerful eyes, that guy.
Yeah. May 1st is transfer deadline day here in Major League Soccer. I'm looking at the news that you and Paul are out here reporting. It's a little bit dry. Should we be surprised about that?
No. I mean, this is usually what happens this time of year. Most teams don't have a huge sample size. Most teams are still well within the running, and teams are relatively content to ride it out until summer with what they have. More importantly, no one wants to give anything up of value yet. No one's a seller just yet because everyone still thinks they have a chance. So I don't think it's too much of a surprise. And if you look back historically, you don't really typically see a ton of moves before the end of the primary transfer window.
What are you hearing though? What are the little rumblings? Cause it may not be finished moves, but there's always something going through the grapevine.
Sure. So a few different things going on. I've been told the Chicago Fire are looking for an international slot. I don't believe they're alone in that, but with the Fire, it's interesting because there's a couple implications there. Our buddy Paul reported a while back about the Fernando Torres interest. Now I've been told that it's unlikely that that's to happen before tomorrow night, simply because Atletico Madrid still in the Europa League. Obviously, Torres would want to be a part of that most likely, and Atletico would want him around for that as well. But there's also the Iker Casillas interest there as well. I'm told that, you know, that's still a thing. And Porto, they're 5 points clear at the top of the Portuguese league right now with 2 games to go. They play the 14th place team in the league at home on Saturday. If they win that one, they win the league. So I would say if of the two, there's a better chance that one gets done now. I would say no sure thing that either of them get done at all. But if you had to pick one to get done this window, it would be the Casillas one over the Torres one, I think. Not saying that's going to happen, but certainly a better chance.
Do you think Casillas is... I mean, I know that Richard Sanchez, we've asked some questions of this year, but he's had some good performances recently. And I look at goalkeeper, and I just wonder, in this league, is that a place to spend TAM, let's say?
He would not be a TAM player.
Would not be a TAM player, really?
Yeah, yeah. I think we reported that a while back. So he would be under the max. Now, you can argue that, you know, if you're signing him for 350, it might be better to sign him for five and then you spend a little TAM on him and get his cap hit to 150. But that's a different discussion. I mean, I think your question, is it worth it? It's all about what number you get him at, right? For the Fire, I know Panovich, he really wants a goalkeeper that can play with his feet really well. Iker Casillas can obviously do that, having played with Spain all those years and Real Madrid. And, obviously very adept with his feet. Certainly more adept than Richard Sanchez, who has had his struggles, but has also had some really, really nice games too this year. So, you know, I mean, I think it would be an improvement for the Fire. Is that the biggest need that they have? No, right? I think we all know that they need an attacker, but I think they'll go out and get that too. And I've been encouraged those last couple of weeks with Chicago and kind of their ability to maybe tread water. And at least stay in contention until the summer window when they might be able to go out and make some bigger moves.
We're talking about TAM right now, and it occurs to me that you kind of broke a little news on the half-life, let's say, of discretionary TAM. For those at home that are wondering, you know, how long does this stuff last? Is this forever money? It's certainly not. What are the half-lives on discretionary and just the normal TAM that every team receives?
Sure. So discretionary TAM lasts 2 transfer windows. So basically lasts for 1 year. Regular non-discretionary TAM, that lasts for 4 transfer windows, so basically 2 years. So what that means is the non-discretionary TAM, every team gets $1.2 million of it to spend. Discretionary, everyone gets $2.8 available to spend, but they have to throw it in themselves if they want to spend it. So what it means in terms of how teams are using it, if you're a team that is going to use all 4, if you're going to use the 1.2 plus the 2.8, what you're going to do is you're going to spend that 2.8 first, because that doesn't roll over into 2019. Right. So say team X spends 2.8 of the discretionary and then they spend $500,000 in non-discretionary. Well, then they still have what? 0.7 million in non-discretionary left over. They can roll that over to 2019 and use it then and increase their total amount of allocation available to what would that be? 4.7 instead of 4. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how it works. I know that was a lot of math and a lot of numbers, but
yeah, I've slept like a grand total of 3 hours today, so I've followed very little of that. What it's telling me though is that discretionary TAM is when you're saying we're making moves right now. This year is so important to us.
If you don't use it, you lose it. Right. So if you know, use it now if you're going to use it.
Anything else rumbling around in Major League Soccer for you? What'd you see this weekend?
I think a few interesting results out there. One of the things that really stuck out to me was Atlanta and Montreal. Obviously not the closest game of the weekend, but just in terms of how it was played, I thought it was interesting. You know, you had Montreal really sit back and bunker and defend and try and defend for all 90 minutes. And it worked for 70, right? They were able to hold Atlanta off the board. They had a 1-0 lead. And then the 5 Stripes put up a 4 spot in the final 20 minutes. And so basically what that kind of illustrated to me, and this is sort of anecdotal, I want to go more into this and look at the numbers and dive in a little, but it felt to me this year like more teams are kind of doing that a little more often. They're sitting deeper, they're bunkering, they're kind of acknowledging, hey, if we come out and play against some of the top teams in the league, it's probably not going to end well for us. And I feel like that's kind of a departure from really the whole history of MLS, where things have been a little bit more even. Obviously, some teams have bunkered in the past, especially when they're on the road. That's not new, but I feel like it's happening more and more often this year. And I feel like that's kind of an illustration and a side effect of the new money coming into the league. So as teams are spending more and more on the attack, teams that maybe aren't spending that much on the attack or have guys injured or whatever it is, are kind of realizing, hey, if we want to be pragmatic and we want to get a result, particularly when we're on the road against some of these bigger, more dangerous teams, we can't afford to have an open game. We're going to muck things up and we're going to sit back and try and earn a point that way.
When you see the, I don't know how you would describe the delineation of teams through this league, how do you make that jump up the line if you're a team at the bottom right now? If you're a team that looks at an Atlanta United or an NYCFC or, you know, let's say maybe a Toronto FC if they get rolling and says, you know, our best chance here is to bunker.
And you want to jump out of that?
Yeah, you
want to move up a level?
For sure.
Is it only spend money, correct. But it's not the only way. Look around, right? You got Houston, you got Columbus, even Kansas City. These aren't teams that have spent a lot of money historically or even this year, right? But they're still performing well. So you can work around it in a few ways. It's not a situation where the biggest spending teams are spending so much more money that it's impossible to play with them, right? Like we might see in other leagues. But, if you have that clear identity, if you have a good coach, if you have a good academy, if you're able to have a good scouting network and you can kind of find some diamonds in the rough that are able to play to the level of some of the more expensive players in the league, those are all ways around it, right? And I think if you want to be a team that spends a little less and you want to compete with the big boys, then you have to kind of use a combination of all of those things in order to kind of level the playing field.
Part of being one of those big boys right now, though, I think is the possibility that you could lose a player via sale outside the league. And I look at Atlanta and Miguel Mirón and certainly are in that category. Matt Doyle was on the show here earlier saying he thinks there's a good chance that's going to happen this summer. At what point does Atlanta United say we've got to make this move? Because based on our investment strategy, based on our recruitment strategy, this needs to happen. Is there a chance we could see that go down this summer?
I think there's a chance. I would say, and this isn't really based on much reporting, but it's just more hunch and kind of educated guess, I guess, if you will. I would say it's more likely to happen after the season. I think Atlanta want to win more than anything, and they certainly have a team that's set up to do so. If you transfer Almirón out, then you're putting a severe dent in those chances, right? At some point, I think they're going to have to move him, but I don't think that's a financial thing. I mean, it might be. I'm not looking at the books, but, you know, Arthur Blank runs a very successful NFL team, and the cool thing about getting 45,000 to 70,000 people in your stadium for every game, that's a lot of ticket revenue. So I would assume Atlanta are doing okay in that regard. It's not going to be a matter of life or death whether or not they sell Almiron. Obviously, it's probably part of the strategy, but I would imagine they'll kind of get him to stick around this year. At some point, he's made noise, not so much noise, but he's said in the past that he wants to go play in Europe at some point. So you're going to have to probably move him on eventually. Otherwise, he's going to start to angle for a move himself. And there are locker room implications there. And, you know, I think recruitment implications there in terms of can you keep your players happy and do you actually sell them on to Europe? So at some point he'll go. I would guess, again, it's a guess. I would guess it would be after the season rather than in the season.
Any other rumblings you've got going through your mind right now before I hit you with the question of the day?
Let's see what else is going on. There were some reports about Philadelphia targeting a Honduran international forward. I've been told those are not true. There's some trade talks going around. I don't get the sense it's anything that big. Doesn't really sound like there's going to be a ton of movement in the trade market. American guys are kind of too valuable. So even like a journeyman type player who's maybe in the 18 but not starting that much has a pretty high value and no one wants to pay for that. And then kind of no one wants to trade their better guys yet because everyone thinks they're still in it. So that's kind of what's happening there. But yeah, hit me with this question
of
the day.
Your life is on the line.
Okay.
One man takes a free kick for you.
Ooh.
It's Kevin Kratz or Sebastian Jovinko. Who are you taking?
They have to score.
Have to score.
Die.
Yep.
Man. Jovinko. I mean, Kratz might have the higher percentage at this point, but I mean, like, my life's on the line. I'm not going with Kevin Kratz. All due respect. Sorry, Kevin.
All right, that's a good way to end it. Gam Tam and Sam, as always, we enjoy our time with him on Mondays. Sam, actually, one more question for you. Have you ever had an experience where there were dead animals in the walls of your abode?
Not that I'm aware of. I've had my pets bring back dead animals to my abode, but never put them in the walls.
Okay, well, you can't answer this one for me then. We'll see you next week, man.
All right, have a good one, Weeby.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
You ain't really wild, you a tourist. I be blacking out with the purist. I made 100,000 then I
back now at Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental here on mlssoccer.com. Subscribe if you don't, please go rate us, go review us on iTunes wherever you listen to podcasts. Big shout out, as I said, to the fans in LA, both at the Galaxy game, which is incredible. What's up, Javier? And everywhere else.
Did you get recognized?
Parking lots, between the stadium. Did we get recognized?
How many times did you get recognized?
I don't know, a good number. It warmed
what
my
is
heart.
What is your immediate reaction to whenever you get recognized? When the guy goes, Weeby, what's up?
Usually what it's to I throw up the deuces, give a smile, maybe try to go get the daps and say what's up, how do you, you know, do you listen to the show? Just try to talk about soccer a little bit.
Were you able to give away all the t-shirts?
Oh, we were mobbed. We gave away 75 t-shirts.
It worked out well for you that you went to the LAFC game where their colors are black and gold and
the
shirt is basically black and
correct.
Gold.
And by the way, I'm still getting emails from people right now that we have stiffed. I'm just going to call it stiffed on t-shirts over the last 6 months or so. I apologize. I'm going to make up for it by sending you your t-shirt. So you need to send an email to the Extra Time account, extratime@mlssoccer.com. Please, 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 please put it in the subject line, t-shirt.
T-shirt. Just well, but don't just like – I would say like everybody's emailing and saying, give me a t-shirt.
Yeah, you need to have – you need to like show me what it was that we said we would give you a t-shirt for. Just because you got your email read or your text read on the show does not equal t-shirt. It's got to be one where we're like, that's great. You get
like,
one. This is
we, like we
email.
Would remember that.
Correct.
Like
we would definitely
about this.
Yeah, we would know. Let's see. Jeff Henry via email on the big question. Bobby Warshaw said Orlando City wasn't a contender for MLS Cup after 5 straight wins. It's a ridiculous question. It's May. But if one of the New York teams had won 5, you'd be fitting them for the rings. Give City some credit, Bobby.
Yeah, because one of the New York teams would look good doing it. It's not about how you win. It's not about whether you win the games, especially since you said it is just May. It's about how the process looks, and do you look like you have an idea? Do you look like you have an
identity?
It's actually
April 30th.
That's even better. I'm not sure for me or for the person.
Yeah.
So
what I did like from Orlando City, and I just watched the compressed match on the plane, and it was the middle of the night, so take that for what you will. Was Justin Miram with a couple nice little touches. Justin Miram, I like to see Justin Miram is at his best when he's like, I'm gonna get after this. I'm gonna try something.
I gotta get after this personally.
Bobby just stood up, by the way.
I don't understand what fans want. Listen, do Orlando fans watch this team and say our team is playing great football? I have no idea.
Bob Bradley over here saying football.
If I watch the Philadelphia Eagles, the Philadelphia 76ers, and they get a win playing poorly, I'm like, man, they really snuck that one out. Like, good for us. It wasn't beautiful. We got the points. When these fans watch their team, is there something about soccer that even if your team loses, you think they played well? I don't understand. This happens every time a team wins, and we're like, oh, they got a little lucky.
I'm in 100% complete agreement with what Bobby just said.
Bobby is right.
Maybe I'm a unique fan if my team plays poorly.
This is a rare case where I 100% agree with Bobby, because this is something that since, you know, I've been doing this over the past 5 years or so that I don't understand. Coming from a person who has been very emotional about his sports teams since he was at the age of 4, I still understand.
Did you cry? Were you a big crier?
I only cried because of sports once in my life, and that was when the Mets were knocked out of the 2006 NLCS. Beltran didn't swing. I just don't understand. Yes, it's right. You know, your team
to celebrate a win.
Yeah, your team, like, I understand, like, your team is on a high. You won 5 straight, but I don't get how you just don't apply any context to, first of all, those 5 wins, which were mostly at home. The 2 road wins were at Philly and at Colorado, not exactly world beaters. And then, you know, the context of the previous years, I understand there's been a lot of additions to this team. We hyped this team up a lot during the preseason, but they still haven't shown me it against quality teams, and they haven't really. I was literally talking about this today in an editorial meeting. They don't control the game ever. Like, it just seems like the game can go any way, and right now the bounces are falling their way. There was maybe that Philly game. Even that, the Mueller goal was a lucky bounce, and, you know, Jack Elliott being weak on the tackle. They're just not very convincing. They're winning, but it's not convincing. Just because you get a win doesn't mean you're the best. You're dominating the league and
They got a lot of wins last year to start the season. I'm not saying it's
context, people.
And that was a Kyle Larin show at that point.
Kyle Larin and the defense was playing really well somehow, and I was hyping up the defense because their expected goals were really nice. But look, just context, people. They have Atlanta, Toronto. They have RSL this week at home, which would be, you know, another RSL match. But then they have Atlanta the week after that. I think it's at Toronto and New York City. If they do well in those games, then we can start talking about them.
That's
that kind of context.
That is
that you
a
want,
litmus
that,
test.
That this reader
East.
Would want us to.
James Chelminski, our friend from Rockaway, via email, he says recently there's been a discussion about more goals being scored in Major League Soccer. Simple question: is this a good thing? Yes, goals are entertaining, but at what point does it feel like there are too many goals and not enough defending?
I'm mad that there's more goals. There's more goals partially because the money spent has gone to attackers, and the attackers are just overall higher FIFA ratings than the defenders. But there's also this distinct lack of defending identity, defending game plan. This is why I was so stoked on Montreal. Montreal lost 4-1, but for 65 minutes, they're shifting side to side. The space in between their lines, it was all gorgeous, and it felt so rare. Yes, there are teams in Major League Soccer who sit defensive and bunker, whatever you want to call it, but few legitimately don't let teams pass between their lines, and Montreal didn't. So the number of goals is in direct correlation to the lack of tactical discipline and thoughtfulness that MLS teams have right now.
I do think there is a discrepancy in spending between attacking players and defensive players. There's no doubt about that. Like, that's a clear and obvious result of TAM and increased investment in the DP program. Like, you know, we are going to look at DPs on the defensive side and say, well, that's an interesting use of money there, unless they're game changers. And then we're going to look at the same thing on the TAM side. And there have been a lot of TAM misses on defenders too. So I wonder if those are a little
Michael
bit more
Ciani.
Difficult to scout. Claude Dielna, although the Revs.
No, Dielna's playing. I thought Dielna was a beast this week, for the record.
I was going to say, but now the Revs are playing well, and so maybe he was a year-long
Yeah, he's one of a case of Bobby of needing to acclimate. Look, I think I don't really think the level of tactical preparation and awareness and all that kind of stuff for on the defensive side has really changed all that much. And from what I've seen in previous years, I think a lot of it is, you know, the stuff that you guys talked about. But I think teams have got it better tactically attacking. That's not just the players. I think teams have more ideas. They run more patterns. They know what they're doing more in the final third than they have in previous years, and that's what's leading to more goals.
Jeff in Tucson via email. I'm watching NYCFC take one from Dallas here on ESPN+. Remember, MLS Live now has migrated all over to ESPN+.
RIP. Pour one out for MLS Live.
Yeah, man. Waiting for the LAFC opening home game. He watched the opening match as well, or the ETL, so props to Jeff. Thank you in Tucson. He looked at the East standings, and while, yes, Toronto has CCL, and it's conceivable to him that they just wear out and miss the playoffs this season. It's happened before. So if Toronto misses the playoffs the year after they win it all through the treble, are they still the best MLS team of all time? Is 1 year of success enough? I'm thinking no. How did we? I just don't know how we get to the point where we're questioning a team that went to two straight finals.
They had
finals,
5 points in their first six games last year.
Dominated two straight finals. Couldn't finish in the first one. So I don't know if you can say they dominated that.
They didn't dominate the 2016 MLS
Cup.
They were the better team.
They were the better team.
Team in the 2016 MLS
were, I think, again, the better team in a CCL final. Should have made history. If they don't win
two
anything.
Two Canadian championships.
For sure. If they don't win anything else, and I'm talking MLS Cup, Shield, CCL, are they a team that we talk about in the terms of should have been better, should have got more, or do they still just get there?
This is a ridiculous conversation.
It feels like we're changing the conversation as we speak. It went from being the single best team ever to are they a dynasty? Are they a? The question was that 2017 Toronto team the best single season ever?
No, that's not what he's asking. He's asking, are they the best MLS team of all time?
You know, when you're comparing them to the 90. The 96, the 99 DC teams.
Correct.
The LD Keen LA teams, RSL, those teams. If they don't win anything else.
But RSL, but remember how.
But RSL only won what? They won one trophy.
They won cup. So that's what I'm saying. Are they RSL, in my mind, I remember for being a great team that didn't necessarily deliver the silverware that they had the potential to do so.
The Houston teams, by the way, sorry.
The Houston teams. They don't really get the credit they. San Jose had a period as well with a couple of MLS Cups.
We need to acknowledge this is two different questions. The first is the best team ever for a single season. We can all agree that they were.
That's a no-doubter.
We're on to a new question. Okay, I just want to make sure that's understood.
That one's done. But I'm saying if this is a team that, for whatever reason, and I don't personally think that they're going to miss the playoffs, I don't personally think that their like trophy window is anywhere close to shut. I'm just saying that the way that the world works is that sometimes the best teams don't always win the biggest thing.
This is just a ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. You don't think it's
what the season's over and they're missing the playoffs? What,
no,
they're,
not,
they're making the playoffs.
That's fine. Okay, I'm saying more about their long-term legacy. Do they need to win something else to kind of be in that same conversation as those DC teams, as those LA teams that won repeatedly and won on the biggest stage repeatedly?
Yes, there's other teams that have more than one trophy.
I don't know.
I feel like this just happened to us really fast, where I was just getting my head around them fully being the best team ever in 2017. Now all of a sudden we've got to think about, I just feel like I'm not emotionally ready for this new conversation.
Okay, yet. We'll move on. Anonymous via the text line.
By the way, the Extra Time live show.
Yeah.
I watched it from here, from in the studio.
Correct.
We already talked about Goss's sweat. Did you forget the Goss back sweat? Was really good stuff, and I wholeheartedly just I'm right there with him.
Gotcha.
Did you listen to his interview with Garth Lagaway?
Did you do the interview with Garth Lagaway?
Can you believe what he said? I couldn't. My mouth was wide open when he was talking. We're not one of the big spenders anymore. You look at Atlanta, New York, Toronto. Those should be the big teams in this league. We're not one of the big teams in this league.
I know. I don't think he was saying that. He was saying we're not the standard bearer.
That's the spending side.
Yeah. I think he was saying in previous times, we were the person, the team, the organization, the club, the ownership group that was pushing the envelope in terms of DP spend, in terms of overall spend, in terms of organizational spend when it came to like USL and everything they were doing and the size of their kind of operation. He was saying, we're no longer in a place where we are that team. We're in a place where we're competing with a handful of other teams or more.
To me, it sounded like he looked at himself below that level.
Garth's entire point, I've heard him give this at a dinner table once, and his point relates to market size, that New York, should Chicago, Atlanta, Dallas are just generally bigger markets, and at some point in the sports life cycle that those bigger markets end up becoming bigger franchises and spending more money. But this is why he argues that it's no wonder that the East turns out to be better than the West when the biggest cities in America are all in the East Coast.
I don't agree with that point just in general because if you look at it, it relates to market size. If you look at the NBA, you know, what are the biggest teams in the NBA?
But not as directly correlated to ability to spend. If your ability to spend is tied to your ability to make money, which is tied to your size of market.
If you're Oklahoma, just if you want to get really nerdy in the NBA right now, Oklahoma City is a huge decision. Can't pay all their players next season because they're going to be in the luxury tax and their owner's not going to want to spend excess of millions of dollars. A team like the Knicks would.
This is exactly Garth's point.
But Oklahoma City has been one of the biggest NBA teams over the past 10
years.
Sure,
but I think the point that Bobby's making is that New York says it's worth us spending that extra money because of the upside within our market. Now, we're a long way away in MLS from being in those same decision-making spectrums as the NBA, both in the luxury tax sense and otherwise. But I do think what Garth is saying, and I think he was saying in the sense that this is a good thing, that there is now competition with the way that we are operating, and there are people that are driving things forward in a different way. Not to say that there weren't before. There's just more now, and there are more avenues to differentiate yourself, your organization, your spending, and they're going to have to be competitive within that market. I think there's also an element of like a disappointing start to the season and a team that isn't exactly a finished product and has some big question marks, whether it be Clint Dempsey, Nico Ladero talking about Boca, open DP slots, TAM players that haven't exactly hit on all cylinders, a slowness to start the season, Jordan Morris's injury. I think there's also an element of like, hey, don't just look at us here. Don't put the pressure squarely on the Sounders.
Yeah, because if you go back, there's a bigger ecosystem. If you go back to 2012, what is MLSsoccer.com talking about constantly?
The Seattle Sounders.
Exactly.
Anonymous via text line. He's ranting on me here. So let me get this straight, Andrew Wiebe. You work for MLS, yet you debated buying the Wi-Fi while on the plane for the CCL final and then decided against it? Isn't that a no-brainer work expense? Then, despite you hosting a popular MLS podcast, you don't make time to watch the game before hosting said podcast? I know the weather is nice out in California, but come on, man. Guys, please give him a hard time for this on the next show. Please.
Because we give we plenty of hard time. First of all, the Wi-Fi, you wouldn't have been able to stream the game.
I couldn't have streamed the game. So that was my decision making. It was
plain Wi-Fi.
It was whether I wanted to be surprised, delighted, or devastated at the end of the flight, or if I wanted to have that just kind of in the pit of my stomach the entire flight there. Which was, if I remember correctly, like a 9 p.m. Eastern flight, and I got into L.A. at like midnight, which would be middle of the night Eastern time. To me, it felt better to just take the punch in one blow. And two people next to me were sleeping. I'm a window seat guy. I did not want to wake them up. It just felt like too much of a hassle. So to get my credit card, which was in my coat, which was in the overhead bin. So that was the logistics of it.
You don't have it plugged in?
Not in my head.
Yeah.
The other part of it,
then we were at the training facility for LAFC for an entire day.
On Thursday?
On Thursday, doing the tour, talking to John Thorington and Bob Bradley and doing all that stuff. And then we came right home and recorded the pod. So I have a lot of excuses.
I'll give you credit, too. People don't realize, unless you've ever done it, that your 30-minute show took 15 hours of production between planning, setting up,
15?
Filming.
It took weeks.
But well, that part too. Once you're on site
for
that day, you show up at 7 a.m. to go live at 8 p.m.
It was exhausting. It was one of the most fun shows we've ever done. I think probably the most ambitious show we've ever done because we were running all over that stadium live. And, it's crazy. The technology is crazy. The timing is crazy. I hope that you enjoyed it out there. Go give it a watch. Let us know what you think.
Yeah,
but
it's still good.
I feel you. I feel you, Anonymous from text line. I really need to go. I can't go back and watch it.
Am I going to go back and watch it? If I was you, I mean, I would have been freaking out and checking my phone.
It's like, you know what? I had anesthetic for my root canal, but I didn't really get to experience it the right way. So I'm going to go back and have it done again without the anesthetic.
You don't need
That's a tradition of bad analogies.
You got the gist of what the game, how the game unfolded.
Kevin Chan via the MLSsoccer.com mailbag. Kevin makes it into the mailbag a lot because he has interesting questions to me that make us think. Mm-hmm. He says, besides TFC, which MLS team would you most want to load up with an additional $2 to $4 million of TAM and send them into the CCL fray next year? he says he would go get a young in-prime D-mid for Atlanta and some depth, and then let's do this.
Yep.
That's who he would send into CCL to try to win this. If you could give a, let's call it a care package, to one MLS team.
I mean, it's the same things we're talking about. It's the same teams we always talk about.
Who is it then? Don't
Atlanta, New York City.
Yeah, you can only give it to one team.
I don't even know what I'd give New York City.
You can only give it to one team.
Atlanta, yeah.
Atlanta, for sure.
100%.
And it's D-mid? Where else you going?
No, center back.
Center back too?
No, I would just go center back.
No DM.
Big Red's got this.
Big Red and CONCACAF?
Yeah, 100%. What are you talking? Why are you giving me a look?
I'm not.
He's giving me a look, by the way.
Bobby's giving you a look. Bobby's over here, like, I can't tell what his look is.
I was hoping you guys would talk so I could buy some more time. I wanted to give something. I always think to myself, like, Liverpool would be the best team in the world if they just signed a darn defensive midfielder. And I was trying to think, what MLS team was that single one or 1.5 players away from being awesome? Maybe SKC with a center striker. Maybe who could make the biggest leap? Could Philadelphia make a big leap?
Oh
with
my
the,
God, you would go to the
with
Union.
A center back.
Stop with
you
the Philadelphia.
Would go to the Union.
Like, can they win like two games in a row?
Oh my God,
David Akam MVP over here. Does he have a goal or assist yet? He didn't even get one.
And then
this week,
and then I was like, maybe Fernando Torres just to play up top with Piatti would be awesome.
I mean, the impact, if you love their defensive line.
If I could have picked three teams for Bobby to pick this for that, I would have gone SKC.
No, totally. This was admittedly,
100%.
This is me reaching. Yeah. But outside of the obvious ones, I'm thinking what team could make
a
huge leap.
So, you know what's a really interesting kind of like undercurrent to this season, which Jonathan Densa hits us up about all the time, is
this
CCL spot.
Yeah,
for the combination of 17, 18 points.
Isn't it going to just be between NYC and Atlanta?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Those are the two teams that we kind of are honing in on because the team probably comes from the East, no matter what.
Oh, 100%.
They're honing in on and saying these are the teams.
Is it what is NYC and Atlanta combined right now?
NYC is up. I don't know.
They got to be
like
at least
5.
Points,
I think it's a 5-point lead or something like that right now. I don't have the math off the top of my head, but
I mean it's between the two of them.
Yeah. So it's a very interesting undercurrent to the season,
which should be good. I mean, there are some rumors coming out of Atlanta though about Almirón, so
being sold.
Yeah.
Well. Matt Doyle says he's the best player in the league right now. So
Harry Kane just scored, guys. So
that makes sense. So
that's how you can – oh, offside, though.
Yeah, no, not going to happen. Here is – we're going to end with this one, and I'm going to ask Bobby to pay attention. Madibo via email. He's Baltimore's biggest Fire fan since 2009 and a dedicated MLS Gen Xer. He says, please select one response from the following answers to the question, what is free space? A – hey, old man, free space is a millennial hipster term. The gas man says don't worry about it. B, Ben Bear says free space is a space in my calendar that is guaranteed to remain empty. C, Matt Doyle says, pause. Free space, ugh. Free space is a modified, a modified noun. Which is like the best imitation of Matt in text form I've ever heard. Andy Wiebe, which is straight disrespectful. From my birth, I hate him.
Do you have Andy on the bottom of your feet?
I hate being called Andy.
That's a Toy Story joke.
Andy Wiebe says, free space is the 15 minutes I get between when my newborn falls asleep and I fall asleep at night.
Yeah,
that's good.
That's Wiebe these
days. Yeah,
that's
good. Some of the production team we were working with were like, basically like, stop talking about your kid.
In LA.
Yeah, I was like, okay, fine, guys. E, free space is one of those words like, quote, upside, which is really just a sports commentary synonym for perfectly usable English terms. We have like 250,000 of them already, like potential or positive attributes. Free space is like there's this aura and like when something bogus happens, it's like I don't want to say and like I may be bummed out, but like I just want to chill. And so it's like I can't do other things, so like I don't want to do anything, and like I want it to all go away. So like that's what the freeness of the space is. And so yeah. G, who cares? I'm just gonna keep using this term, and I don't care if anyone understands what it means. If they don't, well, the audience is just clueless or stupid. Free space is the emptiness between their ears. That is one of those emails that you get through it, and I had to read it like 3 times to fully comprehend its brilliance.
I mean, there was. I mean, I was ripping. I ripped off a couple of jokes there off the joke. So that's all.
Yeah, free space has got some legs, man. I'm gonna go with G. Who cares? Free space, the emptiness between.
I mean, he didn't use guarantee. Just say guarantee. Come on.
No, we're not giving you that. Hey, look. Thank you to everybody on this show for rolling along with me. I'm on fumes, but I'll be better on Thursday. No, I won't. It'll be Dave Goss. I'm off.
You got off on Thursday?
I'm off. Probably Baby with duty? Like big holes in my walls because it has, you haven't heard, but I may have dead animal carcasses in my walls.
We'll talk about this after.
Yeah, we will. All right, that's it for us. Thanks to Gam Tam and Sam, Doyle, Bobby, Bim Bear. I'm Andrew Reby. We'll see you next time.